when I think about my life now, it's actually like cross sections of relationships and responsibilities. So you've got a relationship with yourself. I've got a relationship with my wife, and like that's different than my relationship with my family. And so I start to think of it that way. At Zazun, I report to the board, and the board every year I have to write what I'm going to do, like how am I going to be held to account? And I love that, right? Mm. Accountable. How am I going to be held to account at the end of this year by my board? And that's the relationship I have with my board. And then I have an obligation to my executive team, because that's my team in the company. But my relationship with myself is, it involves, fitness. It involves carving out time for meditation, for writing. I write in a journal every morning. It sounds proactive, but I'm like, these things will keep me sane.
Welcome to the Calgary Sessions. This is episode number 117. I'm your host, Jeff Humphreys. Before we get into the show, one small favor. If you like this episode or like the previous ones, I'd love for you to share it with one friend. That's it. That's all. Today's guest, we were talking off camera and it's like, it's all connected. It's like, oh, you know this person. Then we talk about this place and that place. So I have a sneaky feeling this is going to be a very organic, chill conversation. So please name and who you are.
Thanks, Jeff. I agree. I'm looking forward to the conversation. My name is Darcy Tour, and I'm a serial entrepreneur here in Calgary. I'm currently the co-founder and CEO of Zazun, financial technology based out of Calgary.
Yeah, man. And I think it's the connection is just like, I'm just having flashbacks to all these little moments, like we were talking about the original Mercury. Like I spent a lot of time there, work there. And then you're like, yeah, I lived a block away.
Oh man, that it was like a seafood gumbo that they had
that,
on
that
the
menu. That was
your thing? That was just my go-to. Mm. We lived a block away from the Mercury at the time, and oh, that was dinner too many nights.
So mine was the chicken penne.
Oh yeah,
and that one
good choice.
So I was working at the embassy, and sometimes on a Saturday, like before shift, I go to the Merc for chicken penne before I went to work. Like it was that. It was that impactful on like my day to day, like it was just such a cool place.
I was saying my wife lived in the Anderson Apartments, mm-hmm. so very, very close. And then I bought a house a block away before we were engaged. Or actually, that sounds creepy in retrospect.
Now that you say it a lot.
She, of course, ended up moving in, and the rest was history. But I'm not going to lie. Like, I'm pretty sure some of the glasses in the cupboard were from the Mercury, because we would host all the time and people be like, oh, I'm just going to swing by the Mercury. And I'm like, what? We need a breezeway between the house and totally. The Mercury.
Through the kitchen, out the back.
Yeah,
didn't your sister work there, right? Did Shannon work there?
I don't know if Shannon worked there. She loved it.
Yeah, I can't remember.
She did work in the industry, but
I can't remember if she was there. I feel like she. And I could be like way out to lunch, but between her and like Carmelina,
yeah.
And some other like old faces.
I bet
in
a lot
there.
Of people think like Mike worked there too, but I think he was just a regular patron. But
just holding up the end of the bar with Brad. man, so this will be a fun one. So have you seen any of these? Have you seen one of these?
Yeah, when you had Mike McLeod from Tail Gunner. And awesome. I really enjoy the show.
Okay, so you kind of know what's about to go down. So take it back as far as you want to go. I'd love to learn about where you grew up, how you grew up. You know, how your parents inspired you or didn't inspire you, and what kind of like led you on this path that you're on today. So wind it back.
Oh my goodness. All mm-hmm. right.
And go wherever you want to go.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in a pretty traditional family. So I've spent most of my life in Calgary. I was born in Edmonton. Don't hold that against me, Calgarians. And so some back and forth actually between Calgary and Edmonton. One of the things that I love kind of connecting to my background is like my dad spent his whole career in oil and gas. And in fact, like he was a rags to riches story. He was in a foster home as a child, lost his dad at an early age, and he and his siblings ended up in Woods Home here in Calgary. He went on to become chairman of Woods almost by accident. He was chairman before Woods knew he'd actually lived at Woods with his siblings, but how he grew up certainly informed him, which subsequently had a huge impression on me and how I prioritize things in my life. And family was always a huge priority for my dad. In fact, I met with him this morning.
No way.
We meet very often, and we're quite close and have some business together, which is always fun. But he put himself through school, worked his way up, and he ended up becoming later in his career, but I think he was only like 40. He became, which at the time seemed old, and now I'm 50 this year, so what the hell? But became a CEO of Pan-Canadian Petroleum, so like a $16 billion public oil and gas company. And so I watched my whole life, I watched him really work his butt off. He was home every night at 5:30 for dinner, at least physically. I think sometimes his mind may have been on other
things. Can you imagine what he's like?
Like the pressure, especially like a public company, which I have no desire to run. My mom, like incredibly supportive, right? Like she raised four kids.
Four of you.
She was just the ultimate partner to my dad. And, you know, we certainly had our ups and downs growing up, but I learned the value of family, of being home, breaking bread with your family consistently, having, you know, creating space for those important conversations, but working hard and finding pursuit in something. My dad he's always said to me, do something you love, work with people you love, and you'll be successful. And I think about that often, and you know, I think that's really how I try to think about being deliberate in my career. So I think over the course of time, like through those influences, I think this is an interesting moment in the story. So he ran Pan-Canadian. He poured his lifeblood into that company as CEO, and certainly before that. And 7 years as CEO, he lost the CEO job. And I don't even know if I know the entire story. It was very public, very hard on him, because your identity gets so intertwined. And that was a lesson for me. No matter what I do, what companies I'm involved with, they have an identity, but my identity is not tied to that. It's associated with that. And I think entrepreneurs can really make that mistake, or if you've got a really intense job and you're in a leadership position. That happened as I was finishing school and I was working for Enbridge Pipelines, and because I had so much respect for my dad, I'm like, I'm going to claw my way up the corporate ladder at Enbridge Pipelines, and I'm going to be the CEO one day. I held my dad and his career in such high regard. And then that happened. And I was up in Edmonton working for Enbridge, and he was let go. And he went home, and I'm up in Edmonton. I felt a million miles away from him. So I just got in my car, drove down, and just moved into their house for a week just to make sure he was okay. That was really important, that I could see him and know that he was okay. So that was like a turning point for me. That was a catalyst for how I thought about the world. I'm like, he was CEO, thousands of employees. He added $10 billion in market cap in his tenure. And one day he goes in, and he comes home and he's not there anymore. And it kind of changed my perspective on, you know, that being the brass ring, I guess, if you will. And so then I made another really naive decision. I'm like, well, I'm going to be in charge of my own future. Forget the corporate hierarchy. I'm going to kind of make my way on my own. So I actually quit my job. I had a concept. And at the time at Enbridge, I built it. An application for engineers to use in the field to capture field data and run risk analysis. They were using clipboards and through my dad, actually, and just how I grew up, I loved technology. So I was programming at a young age.
Like how young?
I was at computer camp here in Calgary when I was in grade grade two or grade three, I believe. And we were programming on these terminals. It was in South Calgary. It was like an old hospital, I think, or like a former hospital. And we were programming in Logo. And it was a little turtle that you could program to draw things on the screen. And I fell in love. And it was on those Apple 2E computers, or, you know, obviously very old computer. And I just fell in love with it. So I would learn to program. Any new technology came out, like Palm Pilots, I could write on a Palm Pilot faster than I could write on a piece of paper. And I just loved shiny objects. And so when I was at Enbridge, I'm like, there's a better way to do what people are doing. And I think in technology, a lot of people think technology is about inventing something new, or a business is about coming up with a novel concept. Most of the time, if you look at businesses, general businesses, they found a way to do something better. And so at Enbridge, I'm like, this is better than how they're doing it today. And I think by like an order of magnitude. So there's value in that. And so when I left Enbridge, I started up a company, and I talked to my boss at Enbridge about this. I knew that this had to be something I was to be transparent about. So I had the opportunity to kind of take what I was working on. And I, in fact, became a vendor to Enbridge and offered that same product and service back to them. So my boss at the time, Brad Smith, he was very, very supportive in that transition for me, which was it was an emotional catalyst, but it set me on my entrepreneurial path. So I always thought of that as the beginning, but my very beginning entrepreneurial pursuit was when I was 16, I got my driver's license, and I never thought about, I didn't know what an entrepreneur was. It's a label, right? And
it wasn't really talked about around the house.
It wasn't talked about around the house. And with the way I grew up, I'm like, you know, when you look around a room, most things, this mic, the chairs we're sitting in were made by an entrepreneur, right? Or initiated through the motions of an entrepreneur. And so my very first entrepreneurial pursuit actually was identifying a process that existed, but making it better. So I grew up learning to play the piano through the Royal Conservatory. Sounds really pretentious, but it was just like, that's how you learn piano back in the 80s, right? There wasn't another way to do it. And I'm like, man, if I have to play Fear Elise one more time, I'm going to jump out a window. And so what I came up with was, and my mom helped me, I had got my driver's license, and I'm like, I want to make some money. And I'd worked at McDonald's. I'd had a paper route at McDonald's in Mindapur. My sister worked at the Pizza Hut. I worked at the McDonald's, but they made me work Christmas Eve, and I resented them for that because I'm a Christmas nerd. I'm like, you ruined my Christmas. And so,
did you just want to work at a young age, or did mom and dad just kind of suggest that you should go get some experience?
It's a good question. I think that the value of like earning an income, seeing kind of the jobs that you had to have, when you're younger to earn an income, I think that that was, I think that was just ever present kind of in the household. Like we all, my sister was Shannon was the same way. And so I'm thinking about Fear Elise and playing the piano. And I'm like, oh, how many other kids out there are suffering from this? And I thought, well, piano teachers, they make a decent living. And so I started talking to my mom about this. And I'm like, we lived in Sundance, and Sundance had those big community mailboxes. So the mail didn't come to your house. It went to these big community. That's what they did in the burbs, right? And my mom was like, well, what if you went to their house and you go to the community mailboxes and you print something out? Remember the little tear tabs? And so she said, I'll never forget this. She's like, okay, let's build, like, we'll print out these posters. And I put piano teacher available, and I put Darcy Tour. And my mom was like, put Esquire at the end. And I'm like, I don't know what that means, but that sounds cool. So you just remember those things, right? And I had the little tear tabs. And what I didn't think about was, if you think about the value proposition to the customer, you know, what are things that you're, what value are you providing them? I'm like, I'm a piano teacher, but then I'm a built-in babysitter. You know, the parents would stack the kids up. So then it's like three kids in a row. They can run out and run errands and do those things. And so I ended up with a book of I don't know, 40?
No way,
40 man. Students when all I was 16, all in Sundance, yep. In Mindanpur. I think Willow Park at one point. Then I ran like the economics. I'm like, okay, this is a time fuel. It doesn't make sense. So you learn how to optimize,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so that was actually my first entrepreneurial pursuit. And I remember, this is a Calgary story, when we talk about connections. I remember at the beginning of the month, I would collect all the checks. And so my first month of work, like they pay you in advance and I would get all these checks like for 3 or 4 months in advance. I had a stack and I'm like, this is amazing. And I went to the bank and deposited all of them. I didn't know, but there was all post-dated checks. All right. And so I get a call. I get a call from this really nice woman, and she's actually one of the moms of my students, and she worked at the Royal Bank in Sundance. And she's like, Darcy, hey, I've got a whole like stack of checks here, like mine included. She's like, you can't deposit all of the checks at once. You have to wait until it says the date. And I'm like, oh, so that was my first like finance lesson in having a business. And so like I think if I look back at the time, of course, I didn't realize how informative that experience would be for me later in life. Mm-hmm. And
like so many lessons, from scheduling yourself to figuring out how much to charge, to collecting, to blah, and.
Yeah, that optimization. Yeah. And I actually realized my biggest flaw, and I think people listening to this will understand quickly, is I talk too much. So it would be like the end of the lesson and I'm chatting with like the mom or the dad or the parents, and I'm like 45 minutes would go by, I'm in the front lobby or I'm in the entranceway of the house. I'm like, oh my gosh. So I think I'm making this much, but really it's half that.
Do you, were you like very talented as a pianist, or were you just like capable and thought you could teach? Like, what was the move to go there? Because I feel like to go coach or teach, like you have to be playing at a certain level. Like, were you a high level?
I think that's, so I went all the way through. I finished all of the Royal Conservatory.
Which is legit, right?
Yeah.
You make fun of it, but it's legit. Yeah.
It was hard. Yeah. I had some great teachers along the way, and those Royal Conservatory tests were scary. You go to the Westin Hotel and they've got a piano set up in a hotel room, and there's like, wear a suit, and there would be people sitting behind you. Mm-hmm. You couldn't see them. And then they run you through, you play your songs and the scales, and it was stressful.
Was that you driven, or was that a parent kind of thing?
So all of the kids, all four of us.
Where are you in the?
I'm the eldest. And my sister Shannon, she's my Irish twin. So she's, just over 12 months younger than me. But So being the eldest, definitely, as I look at it, I'm like, I think I've got a lot of attributes of the eldest sibling. You grow up, your parents have way less than like four. My youngest brother is 4 years younger than me. And so my, dad was on his way by the time he was growing up.
Yep.
But back to your question on piano, I think this kind of stuck with me. People would tell me I was talented. And like that would take it away from me, they're like, oh, you've got a knack for this. That's why you stayed in it and other people didn't. And I was like, no, that's like, I put in the work. Mm. Like I put in the work. And so I don't think I'm talented. I think for me, actually, one of my things I've been gifted with is I don't think I'm very talented at much. So I always had to work my, work my butt off.
Yep.
And piano is the same way. But even today, I play every day on the piano. So now it's become like therapy for me, meditation, right? It gets my heart rate down. Mm-hmm. I can't think about anything I'm playing, all the things. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Amazing. Did you turn it off for a while and then kind of discover it later on?
That's such a good question. Yeah, totally.
Why do you think that? So what was the window of when you kind of shut it off and then turned it back on?
When I started my business, it was so consuming. I, lived away from my parents' house, so I didn't have a piano.
Yep.
And so there were years that I didn't play. When my wife and I, when we bought that house down the street from the Mercury, I took the piano. My parents were kind enough to give me the piano that I'd grown up with because I was the last man standing, right? My other siblings did not play. So I earned that piano and I still have it today.
What do you think? Why do you stop playing? Why do you stop?
Yeah.
And I find it very interesting that, you know, this thing that kind of drives you and does a lot for you. But I think as a youngster, you don't really understand what it's doing for you.
No.
On the mental side of things. And then all of a sudden you shut it off.
Yeah.
Get busy with work, family, and. And then all of a sudden you're like really busy and you go back to this thing that feels right. Yeah. And then it does all the magic that it.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like you go back to it on your own terms.
Yep.
It goes from being an obligation to it and a chore and an expectation to an outlet.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important transition. I remember even like much prior to that when I was playing at home and I was younger. That was the other X factor on my piano business, if you will, was I started playing. I just started playing outside of the conservatory music. Like it didn't even occur to me, right? And I started playing. It was like my mom and my sister loved musicals. So it was like Phantom of the Opera and Cats and like Les Mis. But then I would play and they would sing. And man, that was so much fun. So learning to play things that I wanted to listen to or that other people would enjoy. So I love that. So at home, like I've got a 17-year-old son, a 16-year-old daughter. We're going to see Taylor Swift in Amsterdam in July, which I'm pretty pumped about. But I can play all of Taylor Swift's music because I think she's a great artist. It's not the music I would listen to if I'm just opening up Spotify, but I know my daughter and my wife love Taylor Swift. So I think that I get a lot of enjoyment out of that too.
How do you learn that, the music? Are you just like gifted or you just hear it and you know exactly what to do?
When you asked me if I was talented, I've got a neighbor, Garth Kennedy, and he plays around town and he's an incredible pianist, musician, and you can hum like a tune and he can play it. I can't do that. But me, I'm much more mathematically focused. Like my brain, that's where my strength was in the maths. And I just said maths. So maybe that doesn't sound like a strength anymore.
I can barely speak. So I don't even pick up on any of that.
Okay, good.
Somebody might DM me and be like, dude.
That's the worst.
Pull it together.
But I'm really good at kind of transposing the structure, like the mechanical structure of what's on the keyboard, of what's in a score of music to what's on a keyboard.
Yeah.
And I could do the timing. So my kind of superpower, if you will, would be you can put down a piece of music in front of me and I could probably play it to like 80%, depending on how hard the music is. Yeah. What I do almost daily is I'll go home and I've got on my iPad on the piano and you can load up, I'll hear a song during the day and I'll just load up the musical score on my iPad when I get home and I've never played it before and then I'll play it. So a way to relate to what that experience is like, it's like if you're a skier or a mountain biker and you're skiing through like a gladed area, like trees, and you have to focus on your next turn or you're gonna smack into a tree. That's what that experience is like for me. I can slip into that, get into flow for an hour and a half until basically my butt and my back hurt from sitting on that bench, or my wife's like, hey, come and help with dinner, you moron.
I love this, but come on.
Yeah. And so that, that's one of my favorite things.
Has it been like, how many years has it been since you figured this out, that it's kind of like this thing you need to do to kind of keep things in check? Is this a recent discovery?
It was, I'm just trying to think, when our kids were younger, I would say over the last, it's been a long time, I would say 15 years, I discovered it. And now, like I religiously play pretty much daily. And it might be like one song, like there's just no time, but it's a habit. Yep. So, you know, what the good thing about habit, if you don't do it, like it feels like something's wrong, right? It's like making your bed.
Yep.
And so I have to, I've got to do it.
I find it fascinating. And as you're walking through this story, I feel like my example was my fitness. So as a youngster growing up, I was like super active, played a lot of hockey, like I was 20. and then lost all my fitness for probably like, I don't know, man, 13, 14 years. And then, and as you're kind of, you know, you're into the bars, you're working nights, you're just like...
Because your fitness was always associated with hockey. Like it was, whether you're training in season or off season, it was just always hockey. So when you lost, that was your anchoring point.
And then and then it just kind of fades away because, you know, there's not time or whatever. But then I've rediscovered the fitness piece and that's like, it's my routine. And that routine is like, you know, you're a busy dude and you got a lot on the go. Yeah. I have a few things on the go, but I find without my routine around fitness, things, my brain doesn't work at the same rate.
And it's so nice when you've got that and it's something that's good for you, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I believe the same thing like around fitness and that's going to be tied to sleep. And I was saying to you earlier, I'm a partner in Eon Future Health here in Calgary and shameless plug, but it's like part of my passion, right? Doing something that's good for your community, good for other people. And that was the premise there. I'm like, I'm so busy. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to eat, what not to eat, how often I should work out, what do I need to put in my body? What's deficient? Like, can somebody just, I spent all my time building my business. I need somebody to prescribe like the right plan for me, for my age, for the outcomes I'm trying to create. And that was the premise of Eon was, hey, like everyone's different. There should be a bespoke plan to create longevity and a great outcome for people that join and make it happen. I think our best clients there are like you go in there. Yep. Oh, you see the same people and you see these incredible outcomes because they've built in that neural pathway. Yep. And I think like good for you, man. That's great that you got back into that. That's so important.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, it's conversations like these that I've been able to have with different characters and some of them say, you know, successful, whatever successful means.
Yeah.
But something has slipped in their life. And usually it's the fitness piece and then they lose something else, right? They lose a marriage or they lose a connection with somebody. And then, you know, you talk to some pro athletes or Olympians and it's just this driver behind, they just execute on this religion of fitness and it seems to work well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm happy you got back.
But you can see, like as you're done the, that piano piece, I find it fascinating. Like I told you earlier, I DJed around town for a long time and music, it's hard to explain what it actually does for you. Like the high, the low, the soothing, it just calms you. Like it's just, there's so much to it. And I find it fascinating that you can find the time to play it every day.
Like, oh man. Well, it's like you said, it's fitness. It's like I said, making your bed. Like if I don't make my bed in the morning, like it's sits in the back of my head. And it, like James Clear is one of my like Atomic Habits. If you've read it, it's like one of, I think the most impactful books. So everyone at Zazun, like we talk about Atomic Habits all the time, but it's like stacking these habits that are good for you. So have a habit. Like maybe for you found like that fitness aspect again. Well, could you tie it to healthy eating? Could you tie it to like before I work out or after I work out, I'm going to go and I'm going to run to, you know, Whole Foods or wherever and buy, like get the healthy ingredients to make a great meal. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, well, now I associate the two together and then that leads to better outcomes, but you're stacking, you know, you're just stacking a couple of those habits together and you start to get a compounding impact of that.
Have you been like, when you think about this, did the book kind of set you on this path or were you already thinking of these ideas and then all of a sudden you read this book and you're like, oh, this is what I'm thinking and now it really makes sense? Or you just find the book, you're like, oh, this is what I've been looking for. Because you sound really smart when you're saying this.
Well, that's my trick. Like I just regurgitate all of the stuff that I've read and heard. None of it's original.
But it fits perfectly with kind of who you are and how you operate.
Yeah, you've kind of hit on something. I wasn't sure if I was going to talk about it.
You are.
Yeah, you are good at this.
Thanks, buddy.
So I said I'm the eldest of four siblings, and I got on an entrepreneurial journey and early, as we discussed, and my that first company, I was talking about the Enbridge application, mm-hmm. Was called Halo Networks. And I brought my brother into it at the time. So my brother, I'm the eldest, then Shannon, then my brother Jesse, and then my brother Matthew. So Jesse was third in the birth order. And brilliant individual. His intellect, like just a lot of connections there with my dad and some of the gifts that he got, where I'm like, I don't feel like I got some of those gifts. but the part of the story that's tough to talk about is that he ended up becoming quite addicted to everything. Like, there are addicts who get like addicted to like just booze and there's nothing else. But then there are the addicts where, you know, the monster inside, they gravitate to all the addictive things, like the gambling, the VLTs, the drugs, etc. And unfortunately, that was his disposition. We went through this whole process, and we lost Jesse to a drug overdose. And he was working for my next business, Spira. Mm. After Halo, we started a new software venture after we exited Halo. And the monsters started to appear, and I saw glimpses, but it was very, I think as a lot of addicts, it was very hidden. Right. So this manifested over time. And so I became very interested in habits and good habits, bad habits. How can you reprogram your brain from a destructive habit, like change that neural pathway? And it's very, very difficult for anyone who has gone through this. And we've got addiction on both sides of the family. We follow the family tree. Yep. And so that's what led me to even that book specifically. And so that's kind of where, and that informed for me kind of how I thought I could improve things from, you know, you talked about finding your health, right? Yep. So I think if you're going to be successful, or if you want to optimize like the most success for the most successful outcome, it would be take care of yourself, right?
Like, so basic.
It's like, take care of yourself.
Yep.
And then be there for your family, and work is third. And I would say that too. You know, Zazen's a venture-backed company. We've got lots of institutional investors, but I would say that to them. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to put my company first, because if I do that, you're going to get a worse version of me over time.
Yep.
And, you know, to be honest, like, my family is always going to supersede, you know, the work that I'm involved with, and it's just prioritization. Mm-hmm. But do you live your priorities? And then how do you build habits that are reflective of what you intellectually know should be the priorities? Yep. And I'm not saying I'm successful at that, but I'm a student of that.
Like, you go looking for answers. Like,
I think this, I had an investor say it to me, it's a bit braggy, but because I always think like, work ethic, I think, is like the most important thing.
You're on it. Do you think that can be taught, or you just have it?
Work ethic? I think it can be taught. I absolutely think it can be taught. And I think it's, again, it goes back to, like, there's nature and nurture, certainly. But everything is about like action consequence, right? Like, you initiate a thing through a choice, and then an action, and then there's a downstream impact of that, right? And I think that if you think about it that simply, like, kind of like, I would say to my kids, and even with Zazen, when we think about what we're trying to solve for, I'm like, we're trying to solve for you in a moment in time, like when you can't make a, you know, pay a bill.
Yeah.
But we're trying to protect your future self. So we're trying to keep you away from a payday lender. So make a choice that your future self will thank you for, right? And I think when I think about how my wife and I talk to our kids and the things that we do, and maybe we're like, we over-index in certain ways. Like my kids don't get an allowance, but I'm like, I'll pay you $20 an hour to pick up dog poop, to mow the lawn, to shovel the walk, to walk the dog, because that's how life works. Mm-hmm. Like, like put in the work and you get a positive return, right? And so I think that's really important. And then to your question around like, was I pursuing this or like those knowledge, those pieces of knowledge? I think that I would call that like intellectual curiosity. So at Zazun, one of our core values is mastery. And so when we're interviewing and we're testing for mastery, it's great. You went and got a PhD in data science. So we know you can analyze a data set, right? Like, and that, obviously that's an amazing accomplishment.
Way above my head.
But that doesn't make you a fit at Zazun yet. So what did you do last week to just get 1% better? Mm. Like, did you read a book? Did you go to an industry event where they're talking about the use of AI, right, in the in the workplace? Like, what are you doing to improve yourself? And and I think that's something for me. I think it's like the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. Yeah. And it's the pursuit of not trying to get all of the answers, but just pursuing the things that you find interesting. Mm. And if you can connect those things that you find interesting to how you make a living, and you can tie intellectual curiosity and hard work to that, and surround yourself with people that you enjoy, that's the makings of, I think, a pretty good, you know, a pretty good career if you can put those things together.
Do you think that's possible? I know it's possible. Do you think it's possible all the time, or is it kind of like a unicorn spot to be in?
In which
to put all those pieces together,
to
play that all out, and to find that career or that, you know, start a business or do whatever, to have all those pieces on the board, is it utopia that never happens, but you're always working towards it, or is it like, because that's a hunt, that can torment you.
Yeah, you're touching on something else, like that. I think is so important.
Well, dude, you're leading me down all these paths. Okay. I'm telling you, man. I'm just like, it's amazing how you're being very reflective right now. Because it just, the question that I, it's so natural for me to just listen to what you're saying. So yeah.
Okay. Well, this was an epiphany for me, and I think a lot of this stuff. A lot of this stuff came to me just as you get older, right? And you get further down your career. But, one of my directors sent me this, and I always get it wrong. But so Marcos Lopez is the CEO of Solium, and they sold to Morgan Stanley in Cali, a huge tech success story for Cali, for $1.1 billion they sell to Morgan Stanley. Marcos and a few others in town, Brian Craig, Mike Broadfoot, like these guys are titans in the Calgary tech scene. But I'm excited to share, like, that's cool, but I'm excited to share like what Marcos taught me. And this was an epiphany. So they do this. Marcos actually comes in and he invests in Zazun because we're a fintech. We want to be the next Solium. They came in the pandemic. We had institutional capital lined up, and then everything changed, right, for all of us in March of 2020. But Marcos and that team came in and invested, and they took a chance on us, and Marcos is on our board. I'm so grateful for them taking that chance. And Marcos sent me a tweet, like forwarded me a tweet. This was a couple years ago. And Academy Awards were last night. I didn't watch them. I get in trouble with my family because my sister, they're all about the movies. But when Ben Affleck and Matt Damon won the Academy Award for Good Will Hunting, like, think about it. Mm-hmm. They're so early in their careers. Mm-hmm. Like, this is like, you have done it. Mm-hmm. And Matt Damon, and I'm going to mess this up, but I can make the point. When he was reflecting on that, like shortly after winning the Academy Award, he was so sad. He was so sad for the other people that were up for the award that were in their 50s and 60s and never done it, had way more tenure in Hollywood than he and Ben had. And he, you know, he felt maybe a little bit of guilt about this. And he's like, that's, you know, it's almost too bad. Mm. But obviously it's great that they, but as he reflected further on that, what hit him was, it's not about the award. It's about the pursuit of doing something you love. Mm-hmm. And when I thought about that, when I synthesized that, I thought about our journey at Zazun. It was, we're trying to raise capital. We're trying to build the product. The pandemic hits. We finally raised through Marcos and that, a number of other like amazing financial supporters here in Calgary. We're trying to do our Series B round. And when we sit around as an executive team, we're like, oh man, oh, so hard, so grindy. And now we're like 120 people. We have to hire 100 people this year. And we're like, or we get to hire 100 people this year. And we're like, man, what a grind. And like it hit me one day. And I was like, guys, in the grind is the beauty. Mm-hmm. In the grind mm-hmm. is it's a signal that we're doing what we love, unless you're like, I'm not up for the grind, yeah. which and you can get there. And certainly that's a number of factors that tie into that. Yeah. But it's a long story to get to the point, which is finding something you love, surrounding yourself with people that you love working with, doing something like purposeful. And if you get there, you are going to find the grind. Mm-hmm. And like that is, I think, is a beautiful place yep. to arrive at for maybe not for everybody, but yep. for me and the people that I work with. So then that ties back to your questions around like work ethic. And there have been times in my career where I'm like, I could have worked way harder. I could have had more grit, could have been more resourceful. Mm-hmm. But I think if you can connect the pieces yep. together, now I'm like, I don't think I could find more grit. Mm-hmm. I couldn't squeeze more grit. Mm-hmm. I could be smarter. Mm-hmm. I could be, you know, manage my time better.
Yeah.
And so when I'm talking to my team and everyone's like, well, we feel exhausted. I'm like, hey, we're fully formed adults. You know, you have 4 weeks of vacation. We're going to make you take those 4 weeks because
yeah.
you'll come back better. It's like self family job. Mm-hmm. You'll come back better. But this is what we signed up for. And you know what? It's going to be a grind mm-hmm. until the day you leave or the day we sell the company. But enjoy it. Embrace
yep.
embrace the grind. Mm-hmm. It seems obvious, but I think it's lost on a lot of people. Unless you're like, hey, I just want to have passive income and not ever yep. work. Yep. That's a great goal too, but and a great place to work. But I actually think you've got to put in hard work to get to that point.
Totally.
Right? So find your grind.
Did you find a... Can you dial it back to like a how old you were when you figured this out? When you realized like when you're a youngster, none of this makes sense. There's like, none of this makes sense because I think you need to have a bunch of experiences.
Yeah.
You got to put a bunch of dots on the board and kind of figure it out.
Yeah.
But I find there's like an aha moment at a certain age. There were just everything like clicks based on all your previous experiences and the alignment of all of these, you know, work yeah. people you love, do something yeah. like all those pieces. It takes a long time to get there.
Yeah. It like I'm almost embarrassed to say how long it took me to come like to that realization because it wasn't until
40.
Yeah, I'd say 40, maybe a little later than 40. What happened was I left. So I had Halo, I had Spira, was my next one. I put 10 years into Spira, which was I was super proud of it. It's a great, I think, a great Calgary technology company. But I made that mistake I referenced earlier where I like had my identity tied to Spira. And then I left after 10 years, I was like,
Who am I?
Like, what? And so I floundered a little bit. And then...
The idea of like you were the same, like your identity was like meshed together.
Yeah.
How do you explain that? Like what would be examples of how you felt that or what you...
Yeah. So Calgary, we were talking about it before we started, which was like, it's 3 degrees of separation, mm-hmm. right? And so when Craig and I started Spira, we had a few other co-founders, we basically built this business. So it was a field data capture business for oil field service company. So almost like a derivative of what I was mm-hmm. saying I did at Halo yep. for Enbridge. We built the business by wandering through the plus 15s, right? And we sold like the software to CalFrac, to Savannah yep. Energy, to like all of these Badger Daylighting, all of these oil field service companies. And we literally, it was like, hey, let's grab a coffee. We're going for a walk. Mm. And, but it was always like, hey, there's Darcy and Craig from Spira. Mm. And then we raised money. We, you know, we built the employees up, and people really like in our industry knew us as, you know, Craig and Darcy from Spira.
That's how I knew you guys.
And I'm like, yeah, that's me. And so when we exited Spira, Craig and I started a couple of businesses, like a clean tech fuel business, Cattell Energy. And then we met Tate, who had the idea of Zazun, and in fact, like kind of started it. Mm. And so we started to incubate Tate. So we kind of started this little incubator downtown. We were subbing from an oil field service company. It was a client of Spira's, right? And they're like, oh yeah, come post up here. We love you guys, like interested in what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And so from that, at that point in time, I'm like, okay, whatever I do here on out, a company is a construct, right? Like it doesn't exist. It's just a thing that we can attach things to, right? Like going in every day, raising money for, generating revenue, administrating, but it's not real, right? And so that for me was kind of that epiphany. And so that would have been like 2016. So... Mm. Yeah, early 40s. But then I'm like, okay. And then Eon or, you know, any of the other businesses that we've started or helped other entrepreneurs start, I'm like, I'm associated with that business. And I will, you know, I'll invest in it as long as it makes sense, like time, capital, but it's not me. And then so then I'm like, oh, okay, well, you and I are talking. I'm talking to you as Darcy, not... Yeah. Zazun, right?
Yeah. That so you're making like conscious decisions now not to be that, you know, so they don't get intertwined like that.
Yeah.
Now, what does that even look like? Just finding things like playing the piano, things that drive you know, like so you can keep your identity?
Yeah, I think when I think about my life now, it's actually like cross sections of relationships and responsibilities. So like I've got a relationship with myself, right? And so I've been making commitments to myself, which we're all terrible at that. Like I can give you my business plan from now 3 years out. I can tell you how many customers, but I can't tell you really what my personal plan is 3 years out. I can give you some like vague, but so you've got a relationship with yourself. I've got a relationship with my wife, and like that's different than my relationship with my family, right? Yeah. And I've got a relationship with my kids, with each one individually. And so I start to think of it that way. At Zazun, I report to the board, and the board every year I have to write what I'm going to do, like how am I going to be held to account? And I love that, right? Mm. Accountable. How am I going to be held to account at the end of this year by my board? And that's the relationship I have with my board. And then I have an obligation to my executive team, because that's my team in the company.
Yep.
You know, at 120 people, and we're growing very quickly, but my team is my executive team. I need to make sure that team is healthy. So how do I define that? But my relationship with myself is, it involves, you know, fitness. It involves carving out time for meditation, for writing. I write in a journal every morning. Mm-hmm. I try to do all of these things that are like, literally, it sounds proactive, but I'm like, these things will keep me sane. Mm-hmm. if I don't meditate, I don't get, you know, do something physical. Like today, I'm like, it's a crazy day, but I'm going to walk into work and back. I live in Kensington. So at least, you know, I'm doing an hour and 15 minutes of walking, worst case scenario, right?
Yeah. It's so fascinating you're talking about these things. So I had this buddy of mine on. Do you know Mark Kondrat? He's one of the co-founders of the Alberta Beer Festivals.
Oh, okay.
So he launched this idea called Explore 84. So he's taken the year and chopped it up into these 84-day blocks. So they're like 12 weeks. I am bad at math.
Yeah,
it's
84
days in these blocks. And his idea is that you do something for your mind, your body, and your soul, your like spiritual side.
Yeah.
And so his thing is he needs to do something, either one of those every single day in this 84-day chunk, or multiple things every day.
I love that. That's awesome.
So he's launching this app where you can kind of track your things. So you can imagine as you're like talking about this, and you know, from journaling to playing music to being fit, you're kind of doing these things that fit this idea. So
Totally.
But you're the first person that I've heard talk about kind of all three.
Right.
Besides Mark.
Yeah, and I love that.
Do you think that there's, like, how much effort does it take to build that routine to do these three things every day?
I think it's funny because I look at it and I'm like, it's not high effort, but it's discipline, right? Mm. And like, what is it, 25 days to build a habit? I forget what the number is, but I think it's a discipline. But like, I think the power of habit, like I said it earlier, is like, if you can do a thing enough times mm-hmm. where your day feels incomplete, if you don't do that thing, yeah. that's a huge win, mm-hmm. right? And so that, I think it's that mm-hmm. balance, being deliberate, you know, holding yourself accountable, like that's difficult.
Yeah.
But when you hit that inflection where you're like, I'm like, oh crap, if I don't journal today, it's like the Tim Ferriss, like, you know, daily journal. It's super easy, mm-hmm. but I'm like, I need to do it. And mm-hmm. it sets your day up, right? Like again, going back to making the bed, right? Yeah. I'm like, okay, make the bed, write my journal. Mm-hmm. And then, but there's psychological stuff, like the Tim Ferriss journal. It's like, okay, you know, what went well yesterday? What are the three things that you need to, what are the three things that would make today great? Mm-hmm. What are your gratitudes? And then affirmations, which affirmations are really hard, mm-hmm. like three self-affirmations. And like, it's
hard.
Difficult. And there's a lot, you repeat a lot, I think, but yeah. then you're, you know, like mine would be like, oh, I'm a great dad to my daughter, Ruby. Well, can I say that? Oh crap. Maybe I should add like daddy, daughter, date night at the zoo. And then maybe next week I can write them.
I am great.
The bar is very low.
Crazy. It's different though, right? Like how many people in your circle work this way?
That's so interesting. I hadn't thought about that. Like I love that expression where you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. So you can be deliberate about who you surround yourself with because like, we've only got so much time. So the people, a few people, I think the people I'm closest to like have those kinds of elements, mm-hmm. like they would be different. Mm-hmm. My co-founder, like Tate and I, we like, I think really bond over like the Tim Ferriss stuff and like the Tools of Titans and like basically trying to extract like what is it the people that are really successful in their own right, like you say, like you're industry agnostic, but they're like a successful DJ, a successful creator, right? Mm-hmm. Like what is it about people that reach a certain level? What are things that they do that we can, you know, that we can shamelessly steal to try to improve,
twist,
things for us? So mm-hmm. I actually think not precisely the same, but I think the people that I spend mm-hmm. most of my, like Craig Latimer, right? Who was really kind of the mastermind with Lisa, our CEO at Eon. He's somebody who's like, okay, how do I do this? He wants to live forever, right? Mm-hmm. He's like, well, okay. You know, he's reading, you know, Lifespan. He's listening to the podcast. He's helping build out some of the strategy for our, mm-hmm. for our clinic. Like, so he would do it in different ways for me. Yeah. But then I'm like, oh man, I got to steal that one.
I find what's been interesting is the older I've gotten and when you kind of get in your rhythm, like you've created your habits, the things that are important to you. And then all of a sudden you start attracting like-minded people.
Yeah.
And that is like, it's this weird transition. Cause you know, you've had friends for a long time.
Yeah.
And sometimes as you evolve and they evolve a different way, then there's just not that connection anymore.
Yeah.
And I find the older, and 40 is this weird unlocked number.
I think so. I totally think so, yeah.
It's just like something happens and I don't know if it's, but the friend circles after 40 get a lot different.
Yeah.
Because it's, your time is very finite.
Yeah, for sure. I agree.
Yeah, it's so hearing these things, I was like, it reinforces things that I think about.
Yeah.
Which is kind of an interesting piece to all this.
Yeah. Like if I think, how do I think differently in my 40s? Like, like I said, I'm going to be 50 this year. Mm-hmm. How do I think differently? I actually think a lot more about like contemplating what I need to do to set myself up for success in my 50s, 60s, and 70s. And what I mean by that, like, it's not the financial side. It's actually my wife like stayed home with the kids largely, mm-hmm. Like from zero to, you know, my son's 17. And so she's rediscovering herself. Mm-hmm. She's like, hey, like she's brilliant, more disciplined than me, crazy, like just very creative. But I'm like, the thing I think about really often is like, how do we set our relationship up for success? Like mm-hmm. when I sell days, I'll always be working. Like that's just like, cause I love, like it'll be something, right? Mm-hmm. Or a few things. But I think that was a big change for me. How do I set myself up? That's going to be health and longevity. How do I set myself up with my wife? Mm-hmm. How do I make sure my kids are like doing what they love to do? Mm-hmm. I think that's really important. And that's something when we talked about instilling work ethic, like, is that a learned thing? Is that something you're born with? That was when I think about my kids and like how we try to help coach them in like, I want them to find their spark, right? And one of the things I say, a lot of people will say, well, hey, find something you're passionate about and you're going to be successful. I'm like, that's a little Pollyannish, right? Yeah. There's something there, but it's not the whole thing.
Yeah.
The thing that I latch onto when I think about it for my kids, and I'm careful how I position it because I want them to self-discover. I want to create opportunities for them to discover. But I think, what are you great at?
Yeah.
And like, we all like to think like that we're, a lot of us like to think, especially the driven ones, like that we're exceptional, right? Mm. Well, I actually think that most of us are pretty average, but we're born with a few exceptional things. Mm-hmm. And I think if you can be curious about that, and if you can apply that, probably being better than a lot of people at something will help lead to a passion. So the combination of, hey, I've got a talent here, I've got a gift. Mm-hmm. I'm passionate about nurturing that because that's going to help surround me. I can surround myself with people that I really like, but mm-hmm. I can drive that gift. Yeah. And I'll finish my point on that. As an entrepreneur, Tate and I, my co-founder, after we closed our last financing, we had meetings scheduled in New York, but we're like, we're going to go to this conference. And it was like a founders only conference in New York. And I think it was a small number of people. And we got lucky and were able to attend this. And it was the managing partner of Founders Fund, like one of the most famous VCs in the world, certainly in the US. And he said, when he meets with a founder, and he's, you know, they're like, what kind of diligence do you do when you meet a founder? And they're like, they want you to write them a $50 million check. Mm-hmm. He's like, do I think that Jeff could be the Steph Curry of X? Mm. That's his rubric, or like the first rubric that you've got to pass. Cause their job is to get to know fast, right? If I don't think you could be the Steph Curry of natural language processing, let's say, and that's the field you're trying to say you're going to build a multi-billion dollar company against, I'm out, right? And so that ties back to how do we find where we have that unfair advantage? How do we surface that in our kids, and how do we nurture that? I think that's a good element to maybe finding like that thread you can pull on. Yeah. Where should I go? What should I try? What should I do?
Did you figure that out like when you were a youngster? Like when did...
Oh man, you keep asking me like, my answer is so disappointing in all of those things because I feel like it's been more... But recent, maybe.
Yeah, but I think that's what's fascinating.
Yeah.
Because I think, and listen, I say this all the time on this fucking mic, is we always see the highlights.
Yeah.
Right? We always see somebody might know your story.
Right.
And they see you operating at a certain level.
Yeah.
What they don't understand is that you're 50.
Yeah.
Almost 50. Yeah. Look, you look 37. Yeah. But it's... They don't understand how late it was in your life until everything just like clicked.
Yeah.
Right? You're very articulate you can articulate your ideas very well right now.
Yeah.
But I feel like if you and I sat down at 32, you know, I'm sure there's going to be some fumbling and some bumbling and some...
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, when Tate and I met and he presented the concept of... or shared the concept of Zazen, my comment to him was like, hey, I've made a ton of mistakes, way more than you, because Tate was fresh out of school. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I am happy to help you avoid those mistakes, but we're going to make a lot of new mistakes mm-hmm. together. Mm-hmm. But I think this is like a worthwhile pursuit. And like Tate, Jamie Haw, my CFO, he was at First Energy for 15 years as an investment banker. So just very like diverse mm-hmm. Co-founders and almost motley. If you look at, we are not like kind of the traditional co-founders that you would see in like a venture-backed yep. tech company, but there's something really special in that. So it's like, we're talking about what do we need to find and mm-hmm. then think about like the step jump in complexity when you start adding other people to the mix and what you're trying to, mm-hmm. what you're trying to achieve, right? Mm-hmm. And I think there's hard work, but there's a lot of luck
yep.
involved too.
For sure. So how do you, like the younger generation, you know, that shitty cliche of like, find your passion, work hard, it's going to work. You know, if we both agree, that's not really,
yeah.
that's not how it's all connected.
Yeah.
Figuring out what you're great at.
Yeah.
Like how does one go about doing that?
Yeah, it's, man, it's so fun. Like one of the things I love about Zazen and hate is it's just like, being surrounded with people just starting in their career. So I hate yep. it because yep. I'm like jealous and mm-hmm. it makes me feel like I'm 100. Mm-hmm. But I love seeing the curiosity, because we've hired for cultural fit, yep. right? So for ours, it's like hustle, mastery, people driven, and trust. So those are the four core tenets of the values that we hire and fire against. And that's incredibly important. So to answer your question, one of our most recent hires, he's a young guy, somewhat fresh out of school, like he's done something entrepreneurial. I'm like, I can't tell you where the opportunity is at Zazen, but I can attach you to someone at Zazen that I think is going to give you like the scope to like go and figure it out. Mm. And you know, we're gonna make you work. You're gonna work hard. We're not gonna pay you a lot, but go and discover. Yeah. And we're going to see a spark. We're going to see a talent in you, I believe, because, you know, we've assessed you to like kind of open the door.
Yeah.
And that for me is probably one of the things I get the most like gratification from when I'm at Zazen. I'm like, oh, they went in, you know, being an analyst over here,
yep.
but now they're leading like a product pod mm-hmm. 4 or 5 years later mm-hmm. to solve a really important problem for tens of thousands of Americans that are living paycheck to paycheck, mm-hmm. right? That mm-hmm. are counting on us. Mm-hmm. And so like that, my answer to your question is I think curiosity, deliberately yeah. trying to create opportunities to explore things that you can get involved with where you are leveraging that
yeah.
unfair advantage.
Yeah.
It's hard, right? And mm-hmm. so we're talking about Erin Corbett, right? Who came mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. she took over as head of school at WIC. And so my kids go there and I'm just so grateful to have her as in charge of really building out those opportunities for the kids there. Yeah. And when I look at how they manage the opportunities for the kids, they're like a really good example was they were talking about a student. She's like, yeah, both of my parents are doctors, so I'm going to be a doctor. And they're like, okay, no problem. We have a cohort going to the Foothills Hospital, and they're going to actually get to watch a surgery room, right? Whatever that's mm-hmm. called. And and she's watching and like fainted in the middle of it. It's like, okay. And she went on to become a very successful lawyer, right? Mm-hmm. But like, how do you find, we make so many assumptions yeah. by way of like the environment we're in mm-hmm. and the limited scope of things we get exposed to. So I think broadening that's really mm-hmm. important.
Yeah, it's, I feel the same way. You said it way better than how I would say it, but I feel it's like you almost have to trust your instinct, your intuition. You know, when it's saying like, go try this or like, go down this path, go try and be a DJ, go try and like start a graphic design company, you know, yeah. Like go start all these little things. I think you have to trust that.
Yeah.
And it might be weird because there's nobody else around you that's going down that path. Yeah. But I think that's when you start discovering things based on experiences, which is kind of now at my age, I'm 47.
Oh, really? Well, yeah. You don't look a day over 37. Same place, buddy.
I don't go to your clinic yet. But, but I feel like that's been my unlock. You know, like when I was a youngster, there's no way I would have been able to be, I wouldn't have been able to explain it this way.
Yeah.
But now that, you know, you get to this age, you're like, okay, now I understand why they are the way they are.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the right perspective. And as you were talking, I was thinking of one thing that I think is a tripping hazard for, like, especially I see it in tech, and I've done this. When you're building a tech company or you're an entrepreneur, like, we pride ourselves on grit and perseverance, right? And I talked about the grind, the hurt mm-hmm. locker.
Yeah.
But a really important skill set, a really important capability is actually to like quit, mm-hmm. like to say, hey, mm-hmm. I'm in diminishing returns. Mm-hmm. This is not working the way that I expected. Yeah. And Craig and I actually have had that experience where we're into something, you've made a financial investment, you've invested, maybe people you know have made it. Like, that's the scariest part, yeah. right? When you're out raising capital and you're doing, especially in the beginning, you're usually, mm-hmm. you're putting your own in, but then you've got like friends and family. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the scary part.
Yeah.
But being able to wake up and say, you know what, we made some key assumptions that are untrue. We have to, you know, we have to wind this thing up. Like, mm-hmm. that's really important too, because when you get into your 40s, your mid 40s, you do realize that time's your most precious commodity. Most entrepreneurs, I think, or a lot of early ones are like, capital, that's the hardest thing. That's hard. I'm like, no, like your experience, your time, like those are precious. So mm-hmm. be very deliberate about when would you call it quits? Like, what is, because when you're in it, you mm-hmm. can't see that because you're making emotional, you're in fight, flight, or fear, or no, fight, flight, or freeze. And so you want to make sure you've thought about that in advance too.
Have you figured this all out? I think I know the answer, on your own, or like, you know, you've referenced a bunch of books, you talked about your dad.
Yeah.
Like, how does this, how have you been able to put this all together?
Oh man, I've not figured it out on my own. That's for sure. Yeah, you know, you knew that was the answer. Going back to Calgary, there's an incredible network, right? Mm-hmm. So, when Marcos joined our board, I've got my chairman, Bill McAdam. He got involved with our clean tech fuel business that Craig and I were running after, and that was the one that Craig went on to run mm-hmm. When I went on to run Zazun. And what I've found is like, we gravitate towards people that like have experiences and values, but experiences that lend themselves to what you're trying to do. So I think that that's a really important one. I'm having a coach. Mm. So I have a coach that built like a scale-up company. We were part of this Lazaritas scale-up in Canada, which is one of the most incredible scale programs I've ever been through, but it's through Wilfrid Laurier University, and you're given a coach, and mm-hmm. I had a coach, and he's just stuck with me ever since. Mm-hmm. So we have a monthly call, and I'm like, hey, I'm trying to raise this round, or I'm trying to solve for my executive leadership team. Like, we 3x last year, we're going to try to, you know, 3x this year, but my team's not feeling right. Like, mm-hmm. did you ever have this situation? He's like, oh man, I remember where, and you know, he built this and sold his company to WebMD. And so I think surrounding yourself with people that have done what you're trying to do is really important. And even at the stage of Zazun, like, my executive team is the same executive team I had probably 3 or 4 years ago. And none of us have been at a company at this scale, like myself included. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's like we went from like riding a bicycle to like flying a plane, and none of us have our licenses. So I'm like, who's flown a plane before? I'm like, no one's putting up their hand, right? And you've got to like get on the radio with someone who's flown a plane, or better yet, like a rocket.
Yeah.
And you can start to future-proof and develop skills, competencies that you might not have in the moment.
Yeah. I want to bring it back to your dad. The conversations you have with him like regularly, it's rare, isn't it? It's kind of to have that ear, to have that. Does he give you wisdom or just like, you know, he was managing a big ship for a lot of years, so I feel like there's some shared knowledge there.
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing it back to him. Like family. I grew up this way. Like family was everything. And especially when you suffer trauma, like losing a sibling or losing a child, and you're there for each other. And it like, what you know what it does is one of the gifts of losing my brother, which sounds like, how could there be a gift in there? Yeah. But you got to find the gift. It was... Don't sweat the small stuff. Mm-hmm. Like we almost ran out of money a couple of times at Zazen, and we had 30 employees during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And we're like, we're not going to make payroll at the end of next month. And that's terrifying. But I'm like, it's not life and death.
Yeah.
We're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
The people we've hired are incredible. If we can't, you know, make payroll, they're going to find out, like, be terrible. Like, just a horrible outcome.
Yeah.
But it's not life or death. Mm-hmm. And so the wisdom, seeing what my dad's gone through, I'm blessed with somebody. He deeply cares. He's brilliant. We view our family, like my family of origin, my wife left, or my brother left behind a wife and two beautiful kiddos. So like that's part of, those are part of our discussions. How do we support each other through this tumultuous life? Because it's tumultuous, right? And so, I spent an hour with him this morning. We covered, you know, like how are we gonna support my sister through leveling up like her career aspirations, and how are we gonna, I'm challenged with, well, I need to restructure some of my board composition. Let's say, well, he's got that experience. Mm-hmm. And so we have these incredible conversations.
I can't imagine.
Yeah. That. Yeah. And like, so I'm grateful. And he's not gonna be around forever. I'm not gonna be around forever. Mm-hmm. So just, being that would be a gratitude, right? Yeah. Tomorrow my journal would be like, hey, had a great check-in, you know, with my dad. And like we have an investment company, so we deploy capital to to businesses we want to start or care about. Mm-hmm. And you know, we do it with family, which can be dangerous sometimes. Yeah. Like we started or took over a company called Tuesday Brewing. And so that's a non-alcoholic beer company, and my brother-in-law Scott Shepherd runs it. And I'm like, yeah, it's scary when it's your brother-in-law and like you're invested in it. But I'm like, it's also the best because like we get to talk business strategy. I'm like, when he worked for somebody else, we get together, we talk business. I'm like, well, why not talk about a business we have together, right? And so I wouldn't prescribe that for everybody, but I'm like, it's pretty, we think of the family and I think of my family and my kids as we're one balance sheet. Like it's us against the world.
Yeah.
How do I set, how do I give them as many advantages, not through entitlements, but through just removing some friction so they can find that passion. Mm-hmm. They can be successful. They get independent. Being independent is so important and finding that. So
you guys very intentional with that? Like showing your kids different, like just allowing them to experience different things? Or is it conversations? Like, I don't know, like these, do you have these kind of conversations with your...
Somewhat, like...
And the reason I'm asking is that last week I spoke in front of a grade 9 class.
That's awesome. Oh my gosh.
And it was like...
How did it go?
It was weird, man. So grade 9's How old are they? That's like
14, yeah.
14, 15?
14, 15, yeah.
So I really don't know what I'm walking into. And I'd coached, and my only point of reference with youngsters is coaching.
Yeah.
So I've coached my two of my nephews, like under nine hockey. So I walk into this grade nine class, and it's like a, it was a creative writing class. It was an option class.
Yeah.
But the kids picked this class, and then it got changed to creative writing. So none of these kids want to be there.
Oh my gosh.
So you walk into this class and you're trying to, and fuck, man, they're just like, their biggest thing is trying to like, how sneaky can they pull their phone out of their bag and look at it? You know, it's just, but it was a really weird experience. And I tried to talk to them about just trying to do something different.
Yeah.
You know, don't feel like you need to go down this traditional path of, you know, doctor, lawyer, engineer, university, like, you know, it's not for everybody.
Yeah.
Just, and it kind of goes back to the trust your gut and intuition and just be mindful of what interests you and kind of wander down that path and see what you find.
Yeah.
Where's the balance with when you're trying to educate your kids on how to walk down this path?
I couldn't agree more with what you said there. I think it's actually, when I became an entrepreneur, like not the piano teacher entrepreneur, but Halo. Because I was at Enbridge. I was watching, I'm like,
you're on the path.
I was on the path, but like I literally, and I haven't said this to my kids because I want to be careful, but I literally felt like I'd unplugged from the Matrix. Mm. And like I walked around downtown. Like I still walk around downtown because almost everyone works for like Synovus, Canadian Natural Resources, TELUS, kudos to like,
awesome.
That's a massive, massive, massive part of our economy. But I'm like, that's like, so I literally feel like I'm walking around in the Matrix and like I'm just not part of the construct, right? So to your point, I don't want my kids to be confined by you have to go get a BFA in something. Yeah. I'm like, if you're passionate about it. Or, my nephew has taken a really keen interest in cars and he wants to be an auto mechanic. And so then the entrepreneur in me is like, oh my gosh, there's going to be such a massive need for this skill. Who in Kensington and area owns an auto body mechanic shop that's probably struggling to find people that probably wants to exit at some point. And so I'm building out his whole, and then my brother-in-law's like, okay, hold on. Like 1 foot in front of the, he hasn't even started school yet. But I'm like, well, I've got a plan, right? And so like, I might be a little bit too much that way. But I was so thrilled to learn that he wanted to do something where I'm like, there's going to be a massive shortage, which is, you know, a huge opportunity to do something that we know he's great at.
Yeah. Once you unplug from the Matrix, which is unbelievable, because I could just like picture you walking around plus 15s and then downtown walking outside of it all. Like it's very, it's got some impact to it. Did you know right then that this new path you're on is like, this is where you're supposed to be?
I hoped that it was, but it's not for the faint of heart, right? And you know, my wife would be the first to tell you, like when we were together, like it's like feast or famine. Yeah. Like you know, we had an exit over here so we could do some things there. But then you're like Craig and I, when we started Cattell, like after Spira, and so like we just, I don't even know if we'd met Tate yet or if Zazun had started. I don't think so.
And this is from the outside.
Yeah.
Like I've been watching what you and Craig have been doing for a lot of years. And Craig, and you and I haven't been connected for a long time, but I've been watching Craig. He just like pops up all of a sudden and he's doing something. And I'm always so confused about like what it is. Like, So anyways.
Yeah, sometimes I get confused. But no, he's a beast. And it's like, he's my, you know, my work wife, or maybe I'm his work wife. Mm-hmm. And the amount of trust we have with each other and like, and we're so different, but we work so well together. And like that relationship I'm very thankful for it. And you asked a question earlier, like, did I do this, figure some of this stuff on my own? One thing I learned after I founded Halo was like, I'm like, I don't want to do that by myself again. Mm. So I always recommend finding a co-founder and or co-founders. Yep. Because I don't think I would have gone this far with Zazen if I didn't have Tate and Jamie. Like, yeah. I wouldn't. It wouldn't have happened. But sorry, there was a question asked earlier.
Feast and Famine.
Feast and Famine. Thank you.
I got you.
So good. I'm so windy.
You're doing all the work, man. I just.
but yeah, like there have been so many times. Oh yeah. So when we left Spira, we leased out this office. Like I said, we just subleased from an oil field service, like customer of ours at the former company. And Craig would drive to my house in Kensington. Like, I put the visitor pass on his car and we'd walk into work and my wife would be like, so do you guys have a job? And I'm like, well, no, we're working on, like, we have this project. And she's like, oh, okay. So, okay. Uh-huh. And then Craig and I would be walking in. I'm like, dude, we've been walking in today or every day at the same time. We haven't paid ourselves in 14 months. It's 14 months. And we would just laugh. We're like, this is insane. Mm-hmm. But like, talk about being unplugged from the matrix. But I'm like, we're going to find the path. Mm-hmm. We're going in and we're worried. But I'm like, being like, that's where you kind of extract like yourself from that construct. I think because lots of people, if you, it's like, well, what's a job? A job's like, I get paid to go in and do something. Well, that sounds, I see that how those things are, like, they correlate, mm-hmm. but hopefully a job is like,
yeah,
I have this need to create this outcome and nothing's going to get in my way to do so. But I don't think that's as common, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But I sure would love that for my kids. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying they should be entrepreneurs, by the way, but
it's not for everybody.
No.
And I think it's just, there can be a light on it that seems like all the cliches, right?
Yeah.
But it's not, there's a lot going on behind the scenes. And when I say behind the scenes, like in one's head, like there's a lot to deal with.
Yeah, you carry a lot, like a big, big, big one. Like Tate, Jamie and I talk about this, and definitely with other founders, and like founders you see in the headlines, companies you see in the headlines, it's like imposter syndrome, right? Because if you are living on the edge, like the edge of your comfort zone is where the growth happens.
Yeah.
Well, you're not going to have the same degree of confidence,
yep.
and you're going to be questioning whether you should be, you know, flying down that ski slope mm-hmm. at 78 mm-hmm. kilometers an hour in the trees, mm-hmm. but you're having a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll be better as a result, but you don't want to die. Mm-hmm. That's what building a fast growth business looks like. Yeah. And it's, so how do you deal with imposter syndrome? Well, that's where your affirmations come in every day. I've got to be like, okay, I'm a great CEO. Mm-hmm. I can do this. Mm-hmm. I'm a great CEO today, but I can be that great CEO that Zazen needs 24 months from now when we're 200 employees and we're serving hundreds of thousands of customers, right?
Yeah. Do you think the word imposter syndrome or that idea around that is a fancy way to say insecurity, like managing insecurities?
Yeah.
It's kind of like this, the new version of...
It's insecurity, but it's like the imposter... Yeah, the imposter thing is like, this is my, like, for me, it's like, okay, well, you're, you know, I somehow found myself in this position as CEO of this company. And I'm surrounded, like, you know, we do a scrum every day, like 120 people.
Really?
We do a scrum every day. It's all online and it's 15 minutes, mm-hmm. but that's a big investment, right? Yep. But I, like, there are times where, like, Jamie and I after scrum, especially like during the pandemic, like, I remember we got to like 80 people or whatever, and we're like, there are 80 people on that call, they all work for Zazen. Oh my gosh, how do we know they're working? but the imposter syndrome is, it's insecurity, but it's like, should I be in this role? Yeah. Like, it's a little bit, like, it's, mm-hmm. it's broad in that maybe I should, like, is this right? And then you're looking for, mm-hmm. what I find when you're doing something successful too, it's you've surrounded yourself with people that drive you, right? So don't expect words of affirmation. Yeah. Don't expect pats on the back. Mm-hmm. You might get that from stranger or people on the street that know you that like read a LinkedIn post. It says like you're killing it. Well, yeah, that's called marketing. But the people that are like, hey, you're 4% behind budget. What are you going to do about it? Mm-hmm. We're concerned, right? Yep. And that's where people, I'm like, oh, what happens if next meeting we're 8% behind?
Do I have this?
Somebody help me. I'm just kidding for any of my board that might be watching this.
It's on lock. This has been really cool, man.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah, this has been one of those ones I'll remember for a long time because it's, and to be totally transparent with you, it's like, our conversation went a totally different way than the traditional shows.
Okay, yeah.
Which I love.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too.
Yeah, really, really cool. I end it with one question. When I say Calgary, where's your head go?
So Calgary for me is where my kids want to live and work because it's hands down like the best opportunity for them. So that's where, and I think 10 years ago when they were 7 and 5, like I would have been like, hell no, we're hooped. Like they're going to go to school in Toronto and Vancouver and we're never going to see them again. Mm-hmm. So for Calgary, like I feel optimistic. And I think my, part of my why is to like help Calgary get there mm-hmm. for them.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
Dude, it was fun. It was like I've said this to a few people on camera and off camera, but sitting across from people like you, it was like getting my MBA. Because I get to ask these questions, right? Yeah. Of like, I'm early in my game. So when I'm asking these questions, they're twofold. One for me personally and one for the general public. But it's fun hearing you just kind of rewind and think about your journey.
It's nice to actually step back and think about it. Like it's Monday mornings, I meet with my executive team. We go through KPIs, right? I'm like, it's nice to step back and just, you know, revisit. So thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah. Thanks for your time. I'm sure we'll stay connected.
Yeah. I look forward to it.